Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Wednesday, the 13th of March. Very nice to have you with us. We have a great panel and a lot to talk about, so we'll get started. The music you just heard was the Punch Brothers, and they're going to be playing the State Theater in Ithaca on the 14th, otherwise known as tomorrow night, and at Mass Mocha in North Adams on the 16th, punchbrothers.com.
As the old line goes, do you want a Hawaiian punch?
That's right. Good morning. Let me introduce the panel to you. Terry Gibson is here. Terry is a former New York State Senator, a SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Very nice to have you here. Jim Ketterer is with us. He is Dean of International Studies at Bard College and Academic Director of the Bard Globalization and International Affairs Program. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Happy to be back.
And we are so lucky that you are. You know, you really are a smart guy.
And
uh-oh.
Speaking of, WAMC's Alan Chartek is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir, to you. It's been a things are warming up. I did have a half an hour just now with Ed Cox, Dick Nixon's son-in-law.
And that's for CapCon.
Yeah, for CapCon.
Capital Connection, for those of you who keep track of such.
And he was a bear. He was really after Cuomo. I asked him, you know, about you know, his father being vilified, his father-in-law being vilified on CNN. They've got this new thing, and they're playing it. I don't want another guy from the Washington Post in the White House. Not ever. And they have him on tape, you know, doing all of that.
We assume it's a negative piece on Nixon because it's called Tricky Dick.
Oh, I would think from what they're playing, it's going to be a very negative thing. So I asked him, I said, you know, about you know, Watergate. And he said, well, that was just the trivial stuff, all the good stuff. And he started to talk about China, you know, and South America and this and that. And
the
all
positive
the
aspects of his father-in-law?
All he had done, he said. But the other stuff, they were out to get him from the beginning, and then they just got him. I said, but he had a help, didn't he? So there you go.
Good stuff. That'll be on Thursday.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Let's get started. We'll find out what's happening in the world here. I'm glad I have a lot of professors in the room. Let's talk about this. Well, this is quite a story having to do with what is a scandal. It's a college admissions scandal. It is cheating. It seems unbelievable. And yet, here we go. So it's a major college admissions scandal that laid bare the elaborate lengths that some wealthy parents will go to get their children into competitive American universities. Federal prosecutors charged 50 people on Tuesday in a brazen scheme to buy spots in the freshman classes at Yale, Stanford, and other big-name schools. 33 well-heeled parents were charged in the case, including Hollywood celebrities and prominent business leaders, and prosecutors say there could be additional indictments to come.
The one that got me, Joe, was Wilkie Farr. Now, Wilkie Farr, it was the co-chair of Wilkie Farr, one of the biggest law firms in New York City. And what's really interesting about that is, where do you think Mario Cuomo went when he was done being governor? He went to Wilkie Farr. Not that it means anything. Just thought it was an interesting interstitial fact.
The scheme unveiled Tuesday was stunning in its breadth and audacity. It was the Justice Department's largest ever college admissions prosecution. A sprawling investigation that involved 200 agents nationwide and resulted in charges against the 50 people in six states. The charges also underscored how college admissions have become so cutthroat and competitive that some have sought to break the rules. The authorities say the parents of some of the nation's wealthiest and most privileged students sought to buy spots for their children at these universities, not only cheating the system, but potentially cheating other hardworking students out of a chance at a college education. So ultimately, there is this guy, William Singer, who's the founder of a college preparatory business called the Edge College and Career Network, also known as The Key, and they would employ him to help get their kids who maybe on their own would not be able to get into the colleges of their choice. And then it goes nuts because it's SAT scores. It's setting up other people take the tests for the kids, their own testing centers where the results were dubious, using photos of saying that these kids were track stars or crew team members, and taking photos that were doctored and putting those into the profiles of the kids to get them into
taking the
college.
Tests for them.
And paying off coaches at the universities to say that the kids were in fact athletes and should be admitted.
$400,000 to one guy.
Now there's one coach, right? There was one college official who was charged with, and the rest had nothing to do with the admissions, which I thought was interesting.
Was it just one coach?
I thought it was more.
Okay. I'm not sure.
Or maybe you're right on the coaches, but I guess as far as the college admissions officials, that department seemed to be free of it.
It did, but I think that this scandal, and it really is scandalous, is just one other insight into the vagaries of
the way it works.
The way it works, and you know the lawsuit against Harvard a few months ago that was charging that the university was engaged in setting quotas for Asian Americans also offered lots of insights into their admissions process into undergraduate Harvard College, sure. The focus on legacies, setting aside slots for certain athletes, et cetera.
Well, legacies, just to explain, you would do that is if your father went. Or your mother went.
Right, or some relative went. And then we've seen other cases, including some people in political office now, where they got into universities because their parents donated a lot of money. That's different than, you know, cheating on tests.
And that happens all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's not what this is about.
No, this is something more scandalous and more targeted.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. In other words, if going to college, Jim, is a great equalizer. Now, I want to say something good about my mother, and I apologize in advance. She ran a place on the West Side called College and Career Consultants. Sounds sort of familiar with this thing. But the whole idea was to get poor kids of color and Hispanic kids into colleges who aren't going to get in otherwise. That's a whole different ballgame than what we're seeing here.
That is a different ballgame. And when I lived in Egypt— and the organization that I worked for, we ran for the State Department a program called Education USA, which is the worldwide program that promotes American higher education around the world. And even in countries that have lots of problems with American foreign policy, American higher education is still held in very high regard. And imagine now standing in front of a group of Egyptian students and parents or anywhere in the world and talking about the merits of American higher education and the fairness of the admissions process.
And you can imagine, Joe, being out on bail, if you're a famous actress, out on bail, you were arrested. Now, one of the things that I think is so extraordinary about this story is that the guy's name is Singer, Joe?
Yes.
Singer. Is that Singer was the mastermind. He set it up, he encouraged everybody, and he was the first rat to turn state's evidence and to implicate everybody else and to get them on the phone.
Why?
To wire them on the phone.
Why should he do that alone? So I want to get to Alan's point because I think it's a fascinating one, which is, so how is this? We know how it's different, I guess. But so you're George W. Bush, and you don't have the grades, perhaps, to get into Yale. And yet your father went to Yale, so your father calls and gives a lot of money to Yale, and then you get into Yale.
Well, your father was also president at the time.
Well, no, before that.
And your grandfather was a senator.
Yeah, and your grandfather was a senator. He would have been head of the CIA at that point, right?
Sure,
So, but still, but that's different. We all accept that, right? And I don't think
Maybe we should.
Is it different, though? I think it's worth debating about. Yeah. Is it really different? And should that be treated just as much of a crime as what's happened today? I think there's a fine line here.
And by the way, there are always ways in. I mean, every college has its eccentricities. Back in the day when I was at New Paltz, there was a program where if you expressed an interest in political science, you could take you in. I remember one guy who was a friend, and the kid went through the music department. He wanted to get in playing the guitar, and they said, "We don't recognize the guitar at the time." And they said, "Do you play another instrument?" He said, "Yeah, the tuba." So he had the guy come up. They had the guy come up and bring his tuba up to New Paltz on a Saturday morning. And guess what happened? The professor came in, said, "Okay, warm up. I'll be right back." And he never came back.
Yeah.
The professor never came back.
Oh, my gosh.
So the kid was in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's important for colleges and universities to have a lot of flexibility to admit people for any number of reasons.
I do.
And I think it's important to draw a line between what is a crime, and this seems to be way over the line.
Absolutely right.
And what is the willingness of whether it's public institutions, SUNY schools, or private colleges to say we want a mix of people part of this community.
Some poor and some rich.
And a variety of people who come from all over. And I think that requires a certain amount of flexibility. But I don't think we should mistake that for criminal activity.
So if these people went and said, "Hey, USC, we'll build you a dining hall," would that be different than this?
That certainly sounds
You mean
like
in return well, for letting their children go to school there? Because people
no,
endow money
would,
to build dining halls all the time.
The answer to your answer to your question is yes.
Here's how it
course.
Would go. You would say, "Oh, USC, I love you. I would love to build you a dining hall. How much would that cost? Oh, $3 million or whatever. Here you go."
And they never, ever, it's the same thing as the quid pro quo with the politicians who get into trouble. They never say, "If you let my on a
no.
telephone, if you let my kid in, you will do that." It's just an understanding.
And then, as you are standing there at the ribbon cutting of the Felicity Hoffman dining hall,
right,
you turn to the president of the college and say, "Oh, by the way, my daughter would love to go here."
You don't have to say it,
right?
They know it.
Well, but, I mean, look, the dining hall is already built, so obviously the check has already been cashed. So at that point in time, you look to your president's administrators to have some morals, to have some values.
But what's driving this too? You know, I mean, this absolute admissions frenzy every year, and it's based on these rankings, which are crazy and are just really, in many cases, not based on anything more than a popularity contest. And it drives parents absolutely bonkers through this process. It puts a huge amount of pressure on the kids. And I think it's wildly misplaced.
I agree with you.
I think if you look at what's driving it, you can go way, way back. And I think at least back to George W. Bush, since you brought that example up, Joe, I think it's one worth studying. What's driving it is that if you can find ways to afford to get your son or daughter into a specific school, regardless of their grades, regardless of their intellectual ability, regardless of their skills, they could be president of the United States someday.
Hey, by the way, why is and I was just curious about this, but why do you think Donald Trump's trying to keep his SAT scores private?
Huh, interesting.
Oh,
why?
That is interesting,
well,
Joe.
I don't know.
That's a good point.
I could only begin to guess that it could begin to show just the same thing we're talking about now, that his intellectual ability, although I'm not sure how many people are really questioning his intellectual ability anyway.
Well, we started this conversation, and I asked the question, and I guess I don't quite understand it. The coaches were implicated, the parents, and no students, right, that were actually, although that could be the case.
At least one student knew what was going on.
Yeah, there were some students who knew,
but
charged.
Yeah.
That's weird too, because some of the mother and father went in, and then they charged the mother or the father, and they didn't charge both. In some cases, they charged both, which is also interesting. But what about the college admissions offices? How did they not know? How were they completely taken out of that equation?
Well, I'm sorry, I don't get what you mean.
The people, so the coaches. Who
yeah,
were
the
there?
The coaches say, "We really need this person for our
right.
lacrosse team."
But the actual admissions people who are letting the people into the school, how do they not know?
Maybe they trust the coaches.
Yeah, sure.
It's a back door in.
Higher education is a very bureaucratic process, whether it's private or public. And there are lots of people and eyeballs and processes and systems you have to go through. And paper passes in through different places. So it doesn't surprise me that it could slip through unnoticed, because you're talking about individuals and systems that are looking at hundreds of thousands of students throughout the course of a year trying to select them.
You see a kid who gets an 800 on their SATs, and then all of a sudden they get an 1800 on their SATs, and you don't think, oh, that's odd.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that I think that these systems are not set up to catch these types of things. But obviously, they may be changing that based on the news story today.
Yeah, but if you know the track coach says this, you know, we need a pole vaulter, and this student's a great pole vaulter, and you know, there's a certain set aside number for the track coach, then you know, I think the admissions people just move on. They say, okay, that fills that slot, and they
even though this person has never pole vaulted in their life,
but they don't know that.
No, I know that.
Yeah, I mean, I assume they don't know that.
The great shame of this, and we all know it, is not that a bunch of people got caught really doing what they've done here, but that the entire system is tainted because people of privilege get into these places one way or the other without breaking the law. But two kids, one of whom is poor, one of whom is really wealthy with a really wealthy parents, has a better chance of getting in.
And at the same time, we see not only in New York, but in New York, but across the country, we see state legislatures and governors consistently underfunding public higher education.
Absolutely.
I think in a way that is so massively counterproductive for society, but also creates this, the perception at least of this two-track system where the families who don't have the means have to quote-unquote settle for sending their child to a public institution. I think that that's just wrong on the facts, but it's also terrible public policy.
And people get it into their heads. I mean, we had a guy who I know, you know, I just know him in our community, who came to see me and say that he'd been saving for his kid's college education all of his life, and wanted to know which was this school better than this school. And I say, no, send the kid to the state, the university, send the kid to the University of Massachusetts. And he looked at me as if I was the devil incarnate. He said, that's not why I've been saving my money. I mean, there is this expectation that if it doesn't cost, it's no good.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing, too. When you look at how much these parents paid, in some cases,
$1.6 million in one case.
Was one case. But some of the lower cases where they were spending $40,000, $50,000, you think to yourself, well, God, you know, that's not even a semester's of tuition. I mean,
not these days,
right? My goodness gracious, it's fairly in that way. It's even if you see the money funneling into this system as opposed to into the universities, it's just surprising.
And I got to say, really quickly, that Ed Cox this morning, a Republican, dyed-in-the-wool Republican, talked about how he had been the head of the SUNY board, I believe, the most important, or an important guy on the SUNY board, the most important thing were our community colleges, which were the unsung heroes of American education. I think he may be right.
Well, I can tell you just from my own perspective that the SUNY system here right now is really struggling financially. The entire system
absolutely.
Is really in dire straits. I mean, they are understaffed, they're underfunded, their infrastructure in their buildings is in great need of repair across the state.
Yeah, it's true.
And you even look at the smaller colleges. We just have about 20 seconds, but even the smaller colleges that we've seen go out over the last in our region in the last couple of weeks. You know, we're talking about these gobs of money that are being spent, and yet these schools are going under after decades.
Can you imagine paying $70,000 a year on a kid's college education?
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here. We have Jim Ketterer. We have Terry Gibson. Normally, Jen Smith would join us from the Berkshire Eagle. She is away this week, so she is, I think, from the note I got, is having fun. So good for her. But she'll be back next week.
Yeah, we miss her.
We do indeed miss her. All right. Let us go to letters and a lot of people weighing in on this subject of the college admissions scandal.
Here is a great letter. A great letter, which I looked over as we began. Phony college applications. Panel, I would like to know how the students who were fraudulently admitted to elite schools performed academically after admission. If they succeeded, what does that say about the SATs, the ACTs, and a shining high school academic record featuring high scores on AP exams? And that's from Fred in Burnt Hills. I think he's got a great point there.
Yeah, because we see more and more institutions moving away from using SAT and ACT.
What
as
is ACT,
admission,
by the way?
I don't know what it stands for.
It's another version of the SAT.
Yeah. And
it's a standardized test that I think has reached the point of where we should have a very serious debate about the effectiveness of these tests to determine a person's ability to succeed in life. I think they are limiting many, many, many people from gaining a good education.
Yeah, I don't think they measure much of anything. And, you know, we see that the University of Chicago is moving away from it. That really sends a signal, I think, given the position of that university in American higher education, but other schools, including my own,
Bard,
that it's optional for admissions.
I'm very proud of the fact that I wasn't admitted to Harvard.
There's still time.
Total silence in the room.
I wonder how Harvard feels about that. I don't know.
I don't even know if I applied. Okay. And Joel says, college admissions. A parent pays $6 million to get their kid into a prestigious college. Begs the question, how stupid was this kid that it cost $6 million to get him or her in? And that's Joel from Port Jervis, parenthesis, where everyone drinks port.
Oh, nice. I have to say that from, not in all cases certainly, but in some of the profiles that were in the indictment and in the newspaper, some of the kids were pretty stupid.
Oh.
Well, you know, you had the actress's kid, I think, who stood up and had bragged that she didn't want to go to college, but she supposed she wanted to have a partying experience.
Yes, and she wanted the social experience of college.
The social experience of college.
Well, this all gets down to this issue of, you know, how much longer are we going to go through this process of using tests to really judge how capable an individual is, how knowledgeable an individual is.
I just want to make sure that we hit it dead on, which is the parents hold a lot of the responsibility
here. Of course.
I mean, that's why they're but this parenting, you were touching on this, Jim, about how we get into this frenzy of trying to go to the right school at the right time and keep up with the Joneses or the Shartocks or the Ketterers or the Gibsons, and there you go.
What are they thinking this morning? I'm sure they're thinking that they have been unfairly singled out because, quote, somebody on tape, everyone does it. So, you know, there's always a rationale that criminals follow. And no, make no mistake about it, this is criminal activity.
Yeah, this is really egregious.
Yeah. Well, see, that's my point now. I think, as you say, this is really egregious. But everything up to there isn't egregious in terms of privilege. What did you say before? Somebody said living in their privilege, or
Well, if a student, these kids got in through student athletics, and that's a whole other subject, right? I mean, that's a whole part of this where a kid who graduates from Georgetown because he can play ball. But is he graduating from Georgetown because he lives up to the academic standards of Georgetown?
But I think it's also interesting that none of the sports involved here are the sports that are usually the source of scandal. The big money sports,
like
football,
NCAA.
NCAA Division I high profile sports. It's not basketball, it's not Division I football, because they're not going to give away those scholarships to somebody who's not actually an athlete. They might skirt the rules in other ways for athletes and have them not be academically qualified. That's a whole other scandal. I mean,
are you saying here? In other words,
these are other sports.
I know kids who have practiced their lacrosse assiduously, hoping to, you know, that it would help them get into college. So that's not NCAA, right?
But yeah, it is. No, it is. They're all NCAA.
They're all sanctioned.
They're all NCAA at different levels.
More popular sports than others. I mean, when you get into basketball and football, though, you know, the two key sports in college.
Those
athletics.
Colleges are making gobs of money.
They're making gobs. They are building dining halls and gymnasiums off the money they make from these very talented athletes who are oftentimes going to go work in the professional league, but they're not being paid. They're not being paid anything other than the fact that they are being given a college education.
When I was at Rutgers, Senator, when I was at Rutgers, I had the admissions people call me up and say, there's this guy, he's a star basketball player, he thinks he may want politics, would you bring him around and be encouraging? And I did it. I mean, I don't know that that means anything, but I did it.
Well, I think working your sources is fine, right? I mean, figuring out, getting letters of recommendation, and doing all of the things, that's all about.
But who has a college athletics can be good.
But who has a better chance of getting that? Come on. I don't know how many letters of recommendation I've written in my life. But obviously, these are people I know. These are people who come to you and say, or who I volunteer to write letters, for their kids. We've all done it. We know it. But think about some kid who was born on Lexington Avenue without those contacts.
Well, I think higher education has to start asking itself some serious questions. I mean, we start at the premise that life is just unfair in general, right? We all
That's
know
right,
that.
Right.
But higher education could be a place where they make an effort to try to make the world more fair.
That's right.
And is that a role that they are serious about playing, or are they serious about just making sure the world gets even more unfair?
You know, I've always said, when you're coming up, we pay for kindergarten, we pay for, may not be the best, but we pay for all the way through high school. And that's the concept there is equality of education, equality of opportunity. We can have an equal chance because everybody is given that basic education. But we cut the line at college and even at graduate school.
But I do think that there are people in private and public institutions who are working to do just that, to create those opportunities.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think we should, paint a broad brush and say the whole system. I do think that this frenzy of admissions to certain schools is creating some opportunities for some really bad behavior. But there are also a lot of very good things going on.
Let me disagree with you, because I think if you take a look at the entire system as a whole and what happens to a poor kid, you get Obama and you get Deval Patrick and you get people like that who have an opportunity, but they are one in just a very small group. So basically, what I just said, I'm sticking with. You may not agree with me, Jim, but I think this is where we really cull everybody out and we say people with assets have a much better chance in a society because we don't let everybody go to college.
I think that is definitely the case, and I think we need to work against that, and I think there are people who are working against it. I worked for SUNY for many years, and I always push back against people within SUNY who would say, oh, well, this is an institution where we do workforce development. And I would say, no, I think we should do education just like anyone does at any prestigious institution of higher education around the country. We shouldn't consider ourselves doing something separate, that we're creating the worker bees of society, and then other institutions get to create the leaders of society. I think if you start off with that kind of language, you're already creating a second track.
We're getting into the weeds here, and I'm sorry for diverting this. But over the years, I have asked my students at SUNY, what's the number one thing that they really want to get out of this? And you know what they say? A job.
Yeah, absolutely.
They say a job. And I think when you tell us that story about workforce development, they're just playing to the audience that they have. Where I don't think...
No, I disagree.
Okay, good. But I don't think... No, it is good. It's
good
to have a little bit of
back
and forth. But it is something, if you take a look at a Williams or a Harvard or these other places, the ability to pull yourself up in order to get a job using higher education in order to do that, I think is less at the elite colleges because that they're assured that they're going to get a job, that there will be a job for them, as opposed to SUNY, where first generation CUNY. When I went to Hunter for nothing back in the day, all those years ago, let me tell you, I would look around, and I would see people, as I've said many times, who couldn't afford $100. It was free. But $100, let alone $500, to be there.
Oh, I needed to get a job when I got out of college, too. And
where'd you go again?
I went to Fordham. So it's not, you know, I went to Jesuit Fordham in New York City.
Very good school.
And the and they gave me a big scholarship to go.
By the
there,
way, you're so. The second person in 24 hours who I've heard refer to it as Jesuit Fordham.
Yeah.
Fortress
Fordham. And I enjoyed it very much, and I got a good education. But I needed to get a job coming out of there. And I think that's the case with many people. My point is that the relationship between getting a good education and getting a job is an understandable one. But we shouldn't – the starting point shouldn't be to say to certain people who are going to public institutions, well, you're here for workforce development.
I don't think
and other people do that.
I don't think we're saying it to them. I think they're saying it to us. I mean, I think that's the big difference.
We can still raise the bar and say, no, you're here for an education.
Let me
And we're all going to participate in this as an education.
Let me tell you about Descartes. Why study philosophy? Is this going to help me? I mean, I think one of the reasons I always – yes, your answer is yes. I think one of the reasons I did well and I was given all these awards and stuff back at SUNY – I know how that sounds and I apologize – was because people knew I was doing it. I was out there and I was doing it, and they wanted to hear from somebody who was doing it as opposed to – and boy, here it comes – turning over their notes another time.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with the letters. We'll continue with this conversation, and we'll move on to other topics as well. We have Alan Chartok, Jim Ketterer, and Terry Gibson with us. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We've got a good one going, and we'll continue it. Alan has more letters.
Okay. Julius says, who signs himself Jules? We've talked about that before. This latest scandal confirms that the rich can well afford a substantially higher tax rate.
Absolutely.
All right. And then we've heard from Anne, who said, are you kidding me? This college cheating scheme is the tip of the iceberg. For years, people have waved their kids into honors classes, gotten them off the hook for drug problems so that they can walk with the graduating class. They have gotten them to play varsity sports at the high school level and beyond. Let's talk equality across the board. I'm sure the next article will be that Trump paid for his kids to have Ivy League diplomas.
You know, I really agree with that letter writer. I do believe it's the tip of the iceberg. And just from my own perspective as a person who proudly went to two very large state schools and had to work my way through both undergraduate and graduate school and pay for a large part of my education. And I'm not alone. There are so many of us out there that had to work while we were in school to pay for education and continue to work after we were out of school to continue to pay for education. And the idea that there are these individuals that can just bypass that entire system and go straight to the top with no real skill set to justify it, with no real intellectual abilities to justify it, it's just really upsetting. It's
you know, I couldn't agree with you more, and I would always ask this one diagnostic question. I had several, but one diagnostic question I would ask my classes were, how many of you have student loans? That's in the State University of New York, right? And the hands were almost unanimous. Unanimous.
Yep.
And that's a bubble that may well burst. That's such a huge number now of the loan hangover, the debt that people are carrying.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
As we see colleges going out of business on one hand, and we see the debt burden growing and growing, it's just unsustainable.
Well, I suspect what's going to happen is the Democrats are going to get back into power and fix that. I mean, I think what's happening is that there has been no movement on mitigating these loans. And not only that, it's worse because a lot of these people, and I know many of them, took out their student loans on the assurance that if they worked so many years as a teacher or if they worked as a social worker, their loan would be paid off. Mm. And now they're double-crossing them.
Well, it's radically changed from when I was in college. When I was in college, I had a student loan, and everybody did. But you could get out of college, get an apartment, find a job, pay off the loan. It was not easy, but you could do it and begin to move on your career. Now the loans have become so big and everyone is relying on them to such a huge degree. Students don't do that anymore. They are going to college with the loans. They're getting out of college. They're moving back home because they can't afford to rent
an
apartment.
Well, they almost have to.
And they're staying at home and working there until they begin to find a job and build a career and start paying off the loan. And then maybe when they're 25, 26, they get out on their own.
Yeah. And again, if state governments don't properly fund public higher education, then then the burden shifts to parents and to students and to student loans. And,
you bet.
And that's where we are.
Mike says, college entrance. Good morning, esteemed panel. Regarding an even playing field on college admissions, what about the wealthy who can hire SAT prep coaches, pay for review courses, and hire, quote, legal college entrance advisors? Is it ever really an even playing field? And Mike from Saratoga Springs is right on the money. Yeah. That's exactly what I was trying to say before.
I think the answer to this question is no.
As inarticulately as I could. Mm-hmm. This is a group of small group of people, relatively, who have gone over the line. But think of all the people who took the Kaplan course and everything else whose parents could afford to pay for it and watch their SAT scores grow by a couple of hundred points. No question.
I still remember very clearly many years ago when I took both the SAT and ACT. I still remember going to this giant classroom with hundreds of people, and they start the clock, and within an hour, half the room is gone. They're done. And the rest of us are there. And you could tell right away, like, all right, well, somehow that group of people got something that we didn't get access to. And the rest
either
of us stayed
or they gave
time.
Up.
No, they clearly just got it done, and they had the answers, and they were well-prepped, and they paid for these courses, and they had all these preparation courses that you can take that are incredibly expensive.
And if the exams are that coachable, what do they really measure?
Yeah. Right.
What are they really measuring?
And here's another one on the same lines. Laura says, the latest admissions scandal. Dear panel, the issue is just another example of overprivileged rich folks gaming the system for their entitled, mollycoddled offspring. I'm glad they got caught. I love that. I am glad that they got caught. May they suffer the shame for their actions. Regards, Laura from Brewster.
I really like the word mollycoddle.
Yeah, that's a great word.
Well, no, but I'm astounded by the kinds of Schadenfreude that we are hearing out of all of this, which is, you know, I'm glad they got caught. They deserve to get caught. Okay, Telesport wrote, college admissions payola. Good morning to another excellent panel. Good for you guys. To state the obvious, the universities bear some responsibility for this debacle. One more testament to the oversized role of athletics. Did no one ever check to see that someone who was admitted because they ostensibly were a talented athlete were not even on the team? I thought about that, and that's Telesport from East Chatham. You know, that's a very good point. But an even better point is, why should they get in because, you know, because of the athletic prowess? I have an issue with that.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that there's an appropriate role for athletics at colleges. I think if it's done well and you take the money out of the system, so, yeah, you know, Division III athletics, no scholarships for athletics, you know, the students are really student athletes, I think that's appropriate. Universities having what are de facto professional teams is absurd.
Well,
is just an open door for corruption.
Now, talk about Schadenfreude. As a person who was inevitably picked ninth out of nine on the, you know, on the base pickup baseball games, I have a certain amount of Schadenfreude about all of this too. Don't you see?
Well, maybe you should have applied to Harvard as a pole vaulter, and we could have photoshopped your head into a pole vaulter, and you could have been in.
But you know, but seriously, on that note, think about the kid that grows up in a neighborhood where he cannot get access to a good public education. The public education system is not in good shape. His family situation is not one that's supportive. He doesn't have good role models, but he has a certain skill, a natural born athletic ability. If that is the one thing that he has, that he's able to nurture himself and improve himself, it would be a shame for that to go to waste. And if a school can use that as justification for bringing him in, to giving him an education, I think that's worthy of consideration. Where many schools drop the ball is that they don't stick with making sure that student gets the education that he's supposed to get.
And Michelle writes to us, I dropped out in the middle of a semester at Brooklyn College, leaving until 3-year stellar record averaging into the low C's. 10 years later, I tried to get back into school at the University of Colorado, who turned me down flat. I explained my youthful faux pas, and they allowed me in on a, quote, save program, where I went for a year on probation, then went on to be allowed in, graduating with honors. It's possible. A lot has to do with attitude when you're, you know, I mean, I believe in Israel. I may be saying this the wrong way, but I believe you have to go in the army before you go to the university. And by the way, by the time you get out, you know what a university education is worth, as opposed to, you know, your parents made you go.
I think from this story and this letter, too, one of the very good things about American higher education are the opportunities for not just second chances, but third, fourth, and fifth chances. That in a lot of other systems in the world, if you fall off the track, you're never getting back on.
Too many suicides as a result.
And it's just a lot of wasted talent. So I think that's one of the advantages of American higher ed.
Aaron says, there are black and brown people sitting in prison today because they listed a family member address as their own so their child could go to a better school. I hope these rich white people are held to the same standard and get time in prison. Lee says, the sins of the fathers and mothers. I have to wonder why the parents who paid to have their children's test scored falsified never considered that those actions might come back to haunt their kids down the line. It's a great question. When discovered in some background check. Cheating has destroyed many careers, even lives. Perhaps they feel that their wealth will always protect them. You know, one of the actresses, Joe, that you mentioned before, was heard picked up on one of the things?
The wires.
Yeah, the wire. Well, on the wire, basically saying they all do it. So, in other words, there's always a rationale for why it's okay to cheat and do that.
But a comment like that does make one wonder how widespread this is.
Absolutely. I think it is widespread, but I don't think it's as crass as this. In other words, I think privilege really operates here, and we all know it. Okay, greetings. Yet another example of the wealthy believing that laws and rules do not apply to them. Trump, Manafort, Stone, Weinstein, Cosby, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks. Sarah in Sandersfield. And Sue in Wilbraham, where everybody owns a pig. I'm not exactly sure how the indictments happened. I made that up, I'm sorry. But has anyone mentioned the fact that Felicity Hoffman's husband is William H. Macy? Roselle raised this, my wife raised this very issue.
I think everyone has been mentioning that.
Yeah, but he didn't get charged.
He did not get charged. That's what I was saying earlier. It's interesting to see in some of the cases that there were two parents who were involved in the meeting. And where both were charged, and there were other cases where only one was charged.
And he perhaps is also suspect, given that they are a long-standing and deeply connected couple. I rather doubt that it was all on Felicity. Sue and Wilbraham.
It's a great point.
Yeah, it is a good point.
There wasn't Lori Loughlin's husband also charged? I think that was the case.
I think so, yeah.
I think it probably comes down to proof. If they caught him on a wire.
Right. If they can do the case.
Jerry says, listening in Mexico. Wow. I think the punishment
Mexico, those... New York.
No, Mexico. I'm sure it's Mexico. In fact, I love hearing from people who are listening on the WMC app somewhere else.
I would often do it when I lived in Egypt.
Oh, wow. Did you listen to our English, Egyptian language service? We don't have that.
No, I'm waiting for that.
So are we.
Jerry says, listening in Mexico, I think the punishment for those wealthy parents who brought their kids way into college should be to pay for college for 10 or 20 other kids who can't afford it on their own. That's a great idea. Greetings to Terry. We're neighbors in Rhinebeck. That's Jerry, your neighbor in Rhinebeck.
Hi, Jerry,
whoever you are. Okay. And now Frank says, college bribes. Dear panel, how stupid are these rich people who pay up to $6 million to get their kids into college? Why don't they just give their kid the $6 million and have them start a business and leave the college space for somebody else? Thanks from Frank. And it doesn't work that way. Frank says, different Frank, students in the mix. Morning panel, while the students are in the mix here, I wonder what they think about being a pawn in their parents' drive to succeed vicariously through them. The student has to live with and keep up with a charade. Nice way to start building a reputation and networking. How to live with the fraud.
When the FBI was, we have to go to a break, but when the FBI was had their press conference yesterday, that is one thing that they talked about, that in many cases the parents kept the fact that they were cheating on behalf of the kids from the kids. So they didn't know. They wanted them to think that they were succeeding and that they were doing very well, even though they weren't, which is...
As the old rabbinical story goes, maybe.
Well,
if
anything else...
Post hoc proctor hoc, right, Joe? Post hoc proctor hoc, you would probably say that. to protect the kid after you were caught.
Well, that's true. I mean, they were saying this in the charges, but I also think it's interesting that, that's just years of therapy down the line. I mean,
yeah, you're after. Well, you never
join the club.
Right, exactly.
You never know who gets caught and what the implications are and how many people are out there who are not getting caught right now. I'll tell you a story which is probably not relevant to anything. But my twin brother Lewis and I, when we were very young and very cute.
As you're telling the story, just look at Ray. Go ahead.
And Mr. Miyako. And 12 years old, we got a call from the big surprise, which was a $100,000 thing. And that's when Charles Van Doren was getting caught and stuff. And they said, we want you to come on and answer questions about, and you could earn up to $100,000, about the Boy Scouts. And I said, well, I don't know everything about the Boy Scouts. And they said, well, don't worry. We'll give you some material to study. And that, by the way, and we never went because some kid came on with a ukulele and he became the star and they had enough kids for a while. And we just got lucky because it ruined a lot of reputations for the rest of people's lives.
You were upstaged by a ukulele.
Yeah, with a cute kid with a ukulele.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's something. That explains so much.
All right, okay. We have to take a break. Unless anybody, you want... I have a story I want to tell, Ray. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. We have a terrific panel here. We have Terry Gibson, Jim Ketterer, Alan Chartok with a lot of letters.
You're so right, Joe. This is called, about a huge number of people who listen to this radio station have had some experience in college. And I think a lot of people are pondering what that all meant. John says, admission scandal. Does anyone know if the students who are fraudulently admitted will be penalized? John from Slinglands. Well, that's a very interesting question, right? Certainly in the court of public opinion, they're going to have a hard time. Can you imagine walking around a campus after you've been outed?
Yeah, it seems hard to believe. And all of this, of course, we discussed this at the exact moment that Paul Manafort is being sentenced to. So and was making news last week for receiving less than 4 years for his
transgressions.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Right.
But I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that when you submit documents for admissions, you have to attest to the fact that what you are submitting is true.
And, interesting.
So I wonder if there is some recourse that these universities could take.
And if they want
to. Because they violated that. Yeah. And if they want to.
But just think about that. These individuals, for whatever reason, believe that these brands, these logos, this diploma with this name on it was so valuable and would put their children at such an advantage that they were willing to take these steps.
Don't think Harvard and Yale will do that for you?
No, I do think. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that they believe that they believed so
strongly.
I think
they believed
correctly,
these were worth
buying. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I think there was a lot of evidence to show that if you can get a diploma from Harvard and Yale, it will put you far above the pack.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah. So they believed that so strongly they were willing to cheat, lie, and steal to do this.
Sure. There's a certain arrogance that goes into all of this. People of great wealth sometimes think that they can do whatever they want because why else would they have all of that money? So we see it, for example, with all the sex scandals, right? Harvey Weinstein had all of that power. What do you use power for? You can only eat that many steaks or you can only do that. And then, this gets next up. We see it with politicians all the time. All the time.
You can buy an election and you can buy a diploma.
Yeah.
Both can happen.
Lorraine says, if parents are willing to spend large sums of money to get their children into college, how much are they willing to pay for good grades? Maybe that should be the next investigation. Well, back at Joan of Arc Junior High School, I remember one old battle axe teacher Ray's not there. He doesn't like my stories. One old battle axe teacher
long gone, I assume.
I'm sure. Long gone. And I won't go into the whole thing, but the parents of the favored used to invite her to dinner on a fairly regular basis. Now, that means you guys are all looking at me as if I'm from another planet. But, I mean, I think the very idea that some of her darlings would be inviting the old battle axe to dinner, and that it would count, and I can prove it counted, but that's another whole story. And so
that sounds like the good story.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a good story. It brings me back to when I ran for president of Joan of Arc Junior High School, and this lady told two of her students that they would fight it out, and this third person from the other class would run against them, and I beat them 2-1. It was the greatest moment in my life, to be perfectly honest with you, and it's why I've declared my presidency based on my presidential hopeful.
Makes sense, really.
Stacy said, "Hi, panel. Sorry, Alan, but I am not with you about SUNY institutions being workplace workforce development. Our focus should always be educating for knowledge and creating lifelong learners. Jobs will follow. If we had more that believe this, the Trumps and Millers of the world would disappear. Yes, everyone should take philosophy. We all do not need to be philosophers, but come on. How about well-rounded individuals? Stacy, yes. Yeah, I'm a professor of history. I love history, Stacy, for whatever it's worth. And I don't think Jim Ketterer or I was saying that's the way it should be. We were both citing examples about that's the way it was. I said to you, and I don't take it back, and if you don't like it, there's always the lumpen proletariat. And that is, I said to you that when I would ask the class what was important about being in college, they were telling me to get a job. I wasn't saying I thought it was, although I have to admit that I think that there are professors, you know, who do not speak relevance to their students, and that these connections can be and should be made. Jim, did you want to?
I think that's the case in all sorts of institutions. I just don't think it's mutually exclusive to talk about getting a high-quality education and getting a job. I think that those two things can and should go together, and that we ought to consider all institutions that their goal should be delivering that high-quality education. That's all I was saying.
You may be old enough to remember the name John Stessinger. He got the Bancroft Prize years and years ago. He was my professor at Hunter. And when he was done, the students would rise from their chairs and applaud him. It was unbelievable. And it really had to do with his preparation and the story he was telling. But it was not to get a job. So, you know, I'm sorry you're not older and can't remember that, Jim. Mark says, the current college scandal shows that the American dream no longer applies in our lexicon. For most people to succeed today requires a college education. Too many poor people cannot afford this education or, as we see now, don't have the means to grease the skids, and that's from Mark. Well, Mark, you may be possibly right, but there's another side to that. If you live in Great Barrington, where I do, and you see electricians who may not have gone to college, may have, but may not have, or plumbers, they're all doing quite well, better than I ever did in terms of money. So it isn't as if you have to have a college education, and I think that's one of the mistakes we make. Nobody?
No, I agree. I think there are many, many reasons to go to college, and I would recommend that everyone do it. But I think also there are lots of jobs that need to be done that you could certainly do without that. I think for me, my experience is more and more is that what students really do need to survive, whether they become an electrician or whether they go into something that's more traditional along the paths of college, is they need to learn how to become more critical thinkers. And I think education in itself is changing to try to meet the needs of professions that are looking for people to think in more creative ways. So taking classes like philosophy and courses that are outside the norm are things that I think are becoming more and more popular because employers want people to have this broad exposure to lots of different types of skill sets.
Conrad says, "Uni scandal. If these rich folks paid taxes that went to improve public education, they wouldn't have had to bribe to get their idiot kids into college." I don't know if the kids are idiots. Do you? No.
Yeah, I'm reluctant to land on the kids in this case and to blame them. I mean, I think that there's a reason they haven't been charged. And as Joe was saying, in many cases, if not all the cases, the parents were hiding from the children what they were doing on their behalf. So I think we should just kind of cast the blame where it's due.
Steve in Cooperstown writes, Gordon Kaplan, the co-chair of Wilkie Farr, who I mentioned had been for Mario's law firm after he left, who was just indicted in the college admission scandal, is a graduate of Fordham Law School. He received his undergraduate degree from Cornell. As a retired partner myself from a top big law firm based in Manhattan, I am astonished that Kaplan would commit such an unethical act, let alone risk a stellar career and reputation. But I suppose where someone went to school has little, if any, effect on their moral rectitude. And that's Steve in Cooperstown. That's an interesting letter, isn't it? When you think about all the people. I mean, sitting running in a jail, I believe, is Shelley Silver, you know, right now. He risked everything. He risked a career because he thought he could do it or that everybody did it or whatever excuse they give. It's terrible. It's really awful. And, yeah. And so that's from Steve in Cooperstown. And then Karen said, higher education, people who are aware of sending their kids to public higher education institutions should take a look at the departmental faculty listings of their schools. So many public universities have outstanding faculty, and frequently those faculty comes from Ivies and the Big Ten schools. They are supposedly well-educated. However, not all the PhD professors graduated from elite schools can get jobs in these same schools. There are just too many of them. But they, in capital letters, are the people who will be teaching your children at SUNY, UMass, or UConn, etc. Your kids will get a great education. I don't think it's even worthy of having to defend the people who are at these places. You are absolutely right. If when I got out, people thought that, you know, getting a job would be impossible for me. And he said, "You'll be driving a cab like everybody else does," and I said, "No, I'll make it work," and did. And so, you know, I think you know, there are a lot of people who are teaching in colleges today, who went to all kinds of places and they got lucky or not. Mary Thomas, or Mary said, college schmollage. Fact, you can earn a heavy equipment operator's license in 8 weeks, and the average starting pay is $62,282 a year. And in fact, a four-year college degree costs a lot more and results in the average starting salary of $50,390. That's from Mary. My point exactly. And then we heard from Katie. March Madness. Given the comments from the panel on the role of athletics in college, just wait a week as the March Madness craziness descends upon us. Who is going to fill out a bracket? Anybody here? Do you do that, Joe? You fill out a bracket?
No.
Jim? No, I don't. Okay. Lee says, college falsery. White privilege is actually that. For white people, in this case, for their children. More popular sports are there now for the exploitation of labor of people of color. Quote, but they get a great education, or so the saying goes. White people arguably get duped into the belief that there is value to elite higher education. That's the new wrinkle. No one who is disadvantaged is surprised. Shame on you, panel, if you are. Get woke. Huh?
I don't think
anybody
surprised.
There, you know, yeah. I always love it when people decide they're going to say we said things we didn't
project.
Say. What'd you say?
When they project.
Yeah. Project is a good word. Yeah. The mechanism projection.
I just want to mention the actual charge for each, most of these cases, I think almost all these cases, of the parents, conspiracy to commit mail fraud and honest services mail fraud. One count in each case.
Now, you will all remember that honest services has been taken up by the Supreme Court a number of times, and some very extraordinary political cases have been thrown out at the last minute, because in order to have honest theft of honest services, you have to have an agreement. If you do this, I will do this. And the Supreme Court has been very strong on that. And so I'm sure the reason some people got charged and some people didn't is what these conversations that have been taped on the telephone were all about. Joe, I got three more. You want them or not?
Yeah, please.
Margie says, stupid. Hi, wonderful panel. Frankly, it annoys me to hear learned people calling other people stupid because they're not cut out for academia. Some of the most clueless people I know have lots of credentials, and some of the most brilliant people I know ended their education at eighth grade. The kids who were shoehorned into college maybe just don't belong there. They might have excelled in a different setting. Love the show. Margie from Olive Bridge. Well, I don't know that we're... I mean, I think... I hate to play into your paradigm, but I do think it was stupid for these parents to endanger themselves and their kids by doing this. So for whatever it's worth, that's where we disagree, I think. Okay, and John says, standardized testing. I think the panel's forgetting the whole point of standardized testing. It was supposed to be a playing field leveler. Without that, the very intelligent poor kids have basically no chance of admission because they don't have the social network that gets them admitted. My family couldn't afford to send me to the University of Chicago, NYU, or MIT, but because of standardized testing, I was admitted to all of them, and Rutgers was a great backstop. Please don't advocate for making the opportunities even harder for the poor, and that's from John. And then we heard from Steve, who said, I think that you need to be more nuanced in your discussion of tests. As a career high school educator of many years, I've often found test scores as an objective way of assessing students. What other method is actually practical? What would you suggest is that is more so? Recommendations, essays, what? Also, there are many kinds of tests. Some are bad, some are very good. But how do you get away from them and still get equitable assessment? And then, this is good. David, who takes a shot at the very beginning, he says, dear esteemed panel and doctor, see, you guys are esteemed.
Oh, no. We're not doctors.
There is an end game to these college...
Are you, Jim? Are you a doctor? No, okay. All right.
There is an end game to these college entrance briberies. Finally getting the kid into to graduate with a degree, which reminds me, was the college exam corrupt bribery system used to get Trump into Wharton Business School? You're not the first person to ask that question today. More importantly, did Trump's parents bribe the school to graduate him too? And that's David from Glenmont, New York. We do know that Trump told Cohn to make sure that his SAT scores were not available. That's what I got.
Although I have to say, you know, does anybody really want their scores out there? I guess if you did really well. I don't know.
I couldn't tell you what my scores were.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't remember it, but I don't think I want to be reminded either.
Right, especially in math.
Exactly. just on behalf of the panel, I would like to thank the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation in Boston and their field office for allowing us to have a program where we didn't have to talk about Donald Trump once.
There, now you've gone and done it.
We mentioned the score, the last thing, but that was about it. We didn't have to talk about anything else, and that was...
And we're still waiting for Manafort,
very
right?
Good. We're waiting for Manafort. That is the second sentencing. You'll remember he was sentenced last week. He is the sentencing is going on now in U.S. District Court in Washington. So we will be, of course, covering that in the newscast at the bottom and top of the hour. My thanks to our whole crew here this morning. Terry, thank you very much. Jim, always a pleasure. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, Alan.
A reminder that Jen Smith, who wasn't with us, she'll be with us next week. We will be right back after this.